The Homance Chronicles.
The female equivalent of a bromance.
So many poor choices.
But so many good types.
But so many poor choices.
All right, take two. This is the fucking Homance Chronicles, and I'm Sarah. Say that again, because nobody could hear you for some reason.
I'm Nicole. Mm-hmm. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can now.
Okay.
Here we go.
Coming out, guns a-blazing.
So we tried to start at 5:30.
Now 6:05.
And then we started. And then your girl here lost complete internet connection.
We haven't had a rainy, cloudy day in Michigan in a couple of weeks at least, which is very weird for us. So maybe all the communication lines are wigging out. Too many clouds.
Yeah, I'm here for that. That's explanations. Sure. Yeah. Or Xfinity just sucks real hard. Anyway.
Possible.
So we were in the middle of discussing a highly not intriguing, but like an intense topic.
Well, I mean, I don't know.
It's intense because I left off on the dad being an intense human.
Yeah. I mean, I don't expect you to stitch together what we talked about before, so I'll just say it again. Mm-hmm. I watched The Curious Case of Natalia Grace on Max after your recommendation, because I guess it's on multiple streaming platforms. And the father or adoptive father of Natalia Grace is extremely problematic for me. The entire docuseries is clearly about him and his lack of accountability, his wanting to be an Emmy award-winning actor, his need to just make money because he's broke. If anything, it left me more confused.
I feel
about
like
the situation.
I feel he's probably the reason I like had to run a train on that show, because there was no way I was going to be able to leave, go to sleep, whatever the case may be. I was addicted to it because he was such a character, and I was like,
the emotional roller coaster that he would take you on and answering one question is bizarro.
Like
he needs to be medicated.
I'm sure he's mildly medicated already, but I also feel like he could be maybe on the spectrum a little bit potentially. And also he may have been abused. So there's that too. So like, you know, he's a fucking mess. I'm not making any excuses. I'm just maybe potentially finding answers.
No, he has crazy eyes.
Yes.
He has crazy eyes.
He does.
He's gay and doesn't realize it. He doesn't understand how to stick to one story. He contradicts himself constantly. They even pointed out in like an interview with him from 2019 to 2022, how he has different responses. And it's just that he's going to provide answers that serve him well at the time that's necessary based on where he's at in the court system, what he's being accused of, et cetera, et cetera. His ex-wife, Natalia's adopted mother, doesn't appear in this docuseries whatsoever, other than his rendition of her. And I don't know. I mean, that's very smart on her part. She doesn't want to incriminate herself in any way, say the wrong thing, be on video for sure, right, saying anything that could be, whether it's true or not, be misconstrued or used against her in court. And all in all, like, I just don't get, what they were doing with their lives prior to Natalia that gave them the type of means that they had.
They were running charitable organizations and doing the Lord's work and doing all sorts of other bullshit. Like,
well, that's what I'm saying. Like, but he also so they're running like a daycare of sorts for autistic children
and
Asperger's out of the garage. And that's enough to make you.
No, he was making tons of money doing stuff in some industry. They didn't get deep into it.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there really was a gloss over on how they had acquired the lifestyle that they had.
I think that he could afford it with his job. I think he was in a creative position at his job at one point.
What job? What was he doing? Like, how did they have the lifestyle that they had? It's to the point where, like, we're going to bring in another person into our family because we feel like we can give back.
No, but I don't think that was a give back thing at all. I think they were literally doing that to gain more notoriety in the community as good people. I don't think there was any way, shape, or form did he have the idea to adopt a child with special needs. I think it was all her running the show. And I think that because he needs a mom, not a partner. And so I feel like she was very controlling, very manipulative. That gets into that later in the series where, like,
I guess, but my whole thing is they're clearly smart enough to figure out a way to be successful in terms of materialistic things. Oh, yeah. So those things require a lot of money. So when the opportunity for adopting Natalia comes into play, there were all these red flags. There were all these signs. There were all these things that a smart person would walk away from. They even showcased multiple potential adopters who walked away.
Because it was some shady adoption practices and weird experiences.
I'm like, and that's
what even further leads me to believe that that couple was literally doing it strictly for notoriety, because it's not something that you take lightly when you have these awkward encounters. Obviously, she went through two couples before somebody else adopted her, and that's two people that they found. Two couples they found. But
right,
anyway,
it was sketch, right?
Yeah, it was super sketch.
So, yes, obviously they had some sketchy things about why they even wanted to go through with this in the first place. And so a lot of the backstory I felt like was glossed over. Like, I wanted more of a deep dive into, like, how do they get to the point of having multiple sports cars in their driveway and thinking that, okay, we're going to move forward with this adoption besides the sketch stuff, which was everything.
I don't think they cared about sketch. Don't think they cared.
To being completely broke. Like, I don't know. There were just like big pieces that I felt were missing.
Yeah.
And I was like, this isn't really telling me a lot of the story. A lot of it was repetitive. A lot of it was finger pointing. A lot of it was him being overly reactive and portraying himself as more of an actor.
Oh, I thought he was portraying himself as a victim. That's what I got out of him.
That too. Yeah. I don't know. And it made me very angry because he had a day in court, but the way that it was set up, it really was not fair for anyone.
No,
it was not a fair trial. There was a jury, so it was a trial, but I mean,
the whole thing wasn't fair though, because they couldn't say anything about her age or her disabilities. So you immediately remove empathy right there. And of course he's going to win if you base it off of facts and blame somebody else and that they get charged separately and they, you know, don't go to court, then that's.
Yeah, the ending of it made me really upset. But in general, the whole thing, I almost didn't make it through because he's like so self-righteous.
Oh yeah. That's aggressive.
Like I was like, okay, I'm gonna finish this because I'm invested. And I've heard multiple people say like the first couple of episodes are like, meh, okay, okay. You know, and then it gets like real weird, mm-hmm. right? And so I was like, I'll stick it out. But this fucking guy is annoying as shit. And I'm having a hard time listening to his voice and looking at his eyes.
But you made it truly. Through. You made it through.
Oh, I ended up like doing laundry and stuff because I was just like, I gotta create some separation. It can't just be me and this guy in my living room.
Can't handle it. Oh my God. Well, we're gonna jump from one scandal to another.
oh, before we take that jump.
Okay.
I now my phone might come on. Okay, here we go. Good. No sound. So I subscribe to Danielle Kirstie's YouTube channel. She does true crime and makeup as well. As like she's like a Bailey Sarian type. And the one that she posted yesterday mm-hmm. It's called The Evil Orphan Who Got Adopted and Drove a Family to Torture. And I was like, oh my God, am I gonna watch about this again?
No, it's a different one, isn't it?
Yes, and it was different. It's the Manuvra family from Chile. And I guess she says in her thing that the movie The Orphan is actually based on this person, not Natalia Grace. But that one is even more fucked up because it's connected to a cult.
Yes.
And the woman who's pretending to be a child legitimately really is doing it on like she had surgeries to like have breast reduction and everything to appear as a child.
Well, fuck, bro.
She went through multiple surgeries to look more like a child.
God, that's gross.
She had a disease, pituitary something or other, where her pituitary gland was not pumping out enough human growth hormone. So she stopped growing younger. So she would always look smaller but not necessarily younger, but smaller for sure mm-hmm. than most adults. So anyway, it was interesting because people were saying in the Natalia Grace docuseries that they could just tell by like looking at her eyes or like looking at her face, like she's not a child. Right. And then in this story, it was very similar. People were like, her eyes just seemed older. Like she had seen more than 13 years.
Seen some shit.
Like, oh my God, what is going on with these stories? Haunting me.
I'm here for
anyone. That one's super fucked up. So if you want to dig in there.
Well, if anybody from Netflix or any of these other networks that we happen to talk about are actually ever listening to this podcast, you could go ahead and just make another docuseries.
Right. Well, and then the other interesting connection is that in our chart rankings, mm-hmm. we were like number 96 in the history category for Chile. And then I get this video about this orphaned torturer cultness from Chile. It's all an intricate web that's weaved by the universe.
And now we're on to Hose of History.
Yes.
I'm still banking on the universe giving us our own TV show soon.
Yeah.
So that's my massive payout. You know, patiently.
I'm with you. I mean, I would hope that it would be a massive payout. Right.
I mean, it will be.
Not just for funsies.
It will be. You have to think like you act like it's going to happen. Don't say would.
Mm-hmm. I know. I'm with you. We're pretending like we're on TV already.
Yeah,
just didn't get ready for it.
Our YouTube channel has millions of viewers already.
Yeah, our non-existent YouTube channel.
Exactly. <Yeah. laughs> All right, so we're here today Our hoe is going to be Agnes Sorrell. Do you know who this lady is?
I have heard the name. I would not be able to say what she's known for, though.
Free the Nip. She was a Free the Nip poster child. She's the lady you sent me. Oh,
she's the one I sent you on Instagram with her boob out.
Uh-huh.
I was like, I know this name.
Yeah. So I went ahead and just did that.
Now have an Instagram DM feed, because that's how, you know, best friends communicate, is just sending each other memes all day.
All day.
But it's a mixture of like memes about not working anymore and or vacations. Or now seemingly starting to take over is these little like snippets about women in history. And just randomly this one came across my feed where this woman's in a portrait and her whole boob is out.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay.
And she had her shit tailored to be just that.
Yeah. She liked that one, the left one better, I guess.
Party tit. Seth said something about her party boob today.
Oh, funny.
It was funny. I actually like cackled. Okay. So Agnes, our Lady Agnes, she had a short life. She was born in 1422. She passed in 1450. Oh. And but she had a huge,
she's only like 30.
Yeah, but she had a massive impact. She was actually 28. Huge impact on society as a whole. And she was the first to formally be recognized as a formal royal mistress. So essentially she was appointed as such. Also a cold case, question mark?
I didn't know that you could be appointed as a mistress.
She was officially recognized.
Okay.
Okay, so she's actually mingling with somebody you've done in the past, Miss Joan of Arc.
I didn't do Joan of Arc.
Did I do Joan of Arc?
We haven't done Joan of Arc.
I feel like one of us did Joan of Arc. She mingled with Joan of Arc, but she was definitely mingling in the same era. Maybe it was somebody that I had done in the past. I don't know. We'll see.
I've done several Joans.
Yeah.
Just not of Arc.
Are you sure? Anyway, yeah. I know you're sure. Who am I asking? Okay. So she was born into like the upper crust class. She was not born in poverty in any means. She was, what I have to believe, was trained to be a chambermaid of sorts. So there wasn't very much on her upbringing. But she was introduced to King Charles VII of France when she was 22, and that was like game over after that.
Mm.
So I think this may be what I did in some weird way. Okay. Nicole's laughing really hard. So at the time, she was maid of honor for Renee I of Naples' Lady Isabella, the Duchess of Lorraine. So I'm not going to get too far into the classifications and all that fun shit, but she essentially was a maid for the Duchess of Lorraine. And then from that time, she went to serve as lady in waiting for Marie d'Anjou, Marie d'Anjou, aka the Queen of fucking France, Charles the Seventh's wife.
Yes. Okay.
And Isabella's. Yep, and Isabella's sister-in-law. So that's how they all kind of passed her along, basically. So Charles did, in fact, have a harem of anonymous mistresses who would follow him about, but she quickly became like top-tier mistress, winning him over with her otherworldly looks and her incredible intellect. Soon the king gave her Chateau de Lac for her private living quarters, where Joan of Arc persuaded him to be crowned king from our old story. Okay. So Charles VII was having issues with his whole, you know, kingship thing, and he went into like sad hiding for a while, and he was really depressed. So after she and the king started their affair, she became much more present in the royal court, and her incredible influence on the king started to become more apparent as she generated just a fuckload more drama. So her extravagant taste earned her some pretty powerful enemies in the court. She became the first officially recognized royal mistress of the French king after he granted her with the title Maîtresse en Titre, granting her all the privileges of court life. So I butchered that title, but essentially he officially named her as his mistress in front of the court, in front of his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's
sharing duties now.
Yeah.
All of them.
Mm-hmm.
Sexually, well, and non.
Uh-huh. Essentially, yes, because she became his, like, he would be influenced by her and she would be able to persuade him to do things. And so let's not forget, though, Marie, his actual wife and queen, had 14 children. Oh, you did, Marie Antoinette? Nope. I'm sorry. I don't know. I feel like it was you, but it's not. I don't know. Okay, so she ended up having a fashion sense that screamed, if you've got it, flaunt it.
Gotcha. She would
regularly keep her bodice unlaced so her boobies were exposed.
Mm-hmm.
Archbishop of Reims urged the king to correct such fashions, and he simply did not. She was the first to introduce exposed shoulders, doing away with respectable necklines. So until her, anybody in court had a respectable neckline, which was like the half crew or whatever. So it wasn't ever, they would never dip into cleavage. That was for poor people. Well, she came in titties out. Literally.
Wouldn't even show a clavicle. I know.
So she came in titties out literally. And the king was like, deal with it. It's fine. I like it. So yes, everybody was offended by her skin, but don't forget, this was France. So while her natural sexuality was like, poo-pooed, they were more distressed by the fact that she was allowed to wear jewelry before they were upset about the fact that her nipples were out. So two centuries earlier, King Louis...
I mean, if people aren't aware, like, France has nude beaches and has been nudist and, like, very open. And I don't know if it's always been that way throughout history, if there was a change at some point in time.
I think it was her. But... I'm just kidding. I don't know, but she certainly had an impact on the culture back then. So it could have been because they're splitting ways from England and becoming France. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what the case is, but yes, their culture is very much, you know, sexual, no taboos.
Liberated.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's the word.
Mm-hmm.
So
personally, I would just rather have my boobs out probably than be in one of those corset things.
Right. Or a bodice. No, thank you. Steel wires in there controlling your boobs. I mean, I wouldn't know what that's like, having anything control my boobs except for maybe like momentum from me running. Or if somebody accidentally slaps them, I don't know.
Right, someone with a heavy chest. Like having them perched up and mounted and restrained is not comfortable.
Well, I feel like, but I also feel like a bodice was like harnessing them from below. So it was actually like as less comfortable, less, I don't know. I don't know.
It lifts them up and it makes you feel like your boobs are at your chin.
Yeah, I don't know what that's like either. I can't even reach my boobs and my chin.
They're pushed up that high. You're just like, I can't even breathe. Really?
Maybe one day. I'll get those giant prosthetic booby shirts. Figure it out.
So anyway, she's just letting them flap about because that would be more comfortable.
Right. So she's letting them all out. But also she was curvaceous and she loved how she looked. And she thought that her boobs were a gift to everybody. And so everybody needed to see them. That was 100% her mentality. I've got it. I'm flaunting it. And since the king of the whole fucking country is my man, I could do whatever the fuck I want. So there were people who were really upset about it, obviously, but then there were people who embraced it and they imitated it. And then all of a sudden, titties out was a fashion. Yeah. So, but 2 centuries earlier, King Louis IX had passed an act prohibiting the wearing of diamonds by anybody but the king and or queen. I couldn't really find a whole lot of actual information on that. But Agnes definitely stunned the court, and I'm kind of paraphrasing at this point. I got multiple sources, so thank you all. So she stunned the court when she sauntered in with the forbidden jewels prominently displayed. Basically, everybody was gossiping about the indiscretion, but since her proximity to the king was what it was, that meant she really didn't have a fear of retribution because it was him who would enact the act on her. So she was actually, it's even rumored that she was even gifted the world's first cut diamond. So when they figured out how to cut them, she got the first one. Directly disobeying that act.
Yeah, very much. I do whatever the fuck I want attitude. Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. So not only was she pissing people off in the courts, but she was also an inspiration to artists around the world. In that time specifically, a painter called Jean Fouquet was so inspired by her boobies that he used her as a model for his painting called The Virgin and Child Surrounded by Angels. It's very popular. It's very commonly known in the art communities. It's almost very modernistic in the way it's been painted, which was a weird step outside of the norm for him as well. So he used her as the model for Virgin Mary, using her exposed breast to feed baby Jesus. His intent was not to make her a glamour model, of course, but rather to use her bust as a sacred mental maternal breast. What a weirdo, man. Like, what a weirdo. In my opinion, I feel like he was just a weirdo artist and he was mildly obsessed. That's where I'm at.
I'm going to say he was very obsessed, and not only was it a maternal thing, but also a very religious thing.
Yeah. So in that, he, it was painted, and like I said, it was painted in that non-traditional style. So even people at the time questioned whether or not he was painting a tribute or he was painting a crush. Dun, dun, dun.
Mm-hmm.
Could see through it back then.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I mean, what guy isn't going to have a crush on a woman who's walking around with her boobs out?
I mean, right? Especially when the like necklines weren't plunging back then, unless they were ladies of the night.
Right.
So speaking of fashion, Agnes became the fashion icon in France. She was dubbed like the beauty of most beautiful woman in France. She was absolutely fucking gorgeous. And part of her efforts were promoting French fashion, selling more than just the concept as France as a cultured nation. She marketed the stylish and luxurious products for the nation as well. So she was a sight to behold at all times. She was always bejeweled and done up, as I said. She always had fur lined. Like her outfits always had fur lining. She was always wearing the colors. She had like the fairy caps, you know, when they used to wear those tall pointy caps, and hers were always much taller than they needed to be and full of glitz and glam.
Mm-hmm.
She would also pluck her hairline, which was a thing back then. Yes. FYI, if you didn't know, in the 1400s, it was fashionable to have high, far back hairlines, like to have large foreheads. So she would pluck her hairline and eyebrows, so there was also almost nothing left to keep in time with the fashions. She was definitely a menace to some.
Jesus. I'm looking at her pictures, and yeah, it's weird.
Right?
The hairline thing is tripping me out.
It's a weird thing, but it was definitely a fashion trend back then.
And then she's got on this huge hat thing with a Ariana Grande like ponytail situation that's not actual hair.
Right.
Huh.
Fashion, bitches. And so she like was definitely, I would say, dare to say, almost internationally known. But this was all happening through like royal politic time. And so like before she came into the king's life, he was incredibly depressed. He was in hiding, and she was actually able to pull the king out of his funk. She encouraged him to get his kingdom and finances back in order. Also encouraged him to rejoin the conflict against England. So England was trying to take over and do more than it should. And France was like, you need to calm the fuck down. And he was like, nah, dude, I'm not doing it. So then France is like, man, you need to though. So she was also really like really well known for her kindness and consideration for folks who are not as lucky as her. And she was a very charitable lady, giving alms and other possessions to the poorer churches and beggars in the areas. So she was always like giving away as much as she had, she would give.
She reminds me of Empress Cece.
Yeah, a little bit. A little tiny bit.
Who was one of the first people that I covered.
Yeah, I remember her. Good lady. So it's like she's okay. So Charles had a son. Marie had 14 children, remember?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Charles's mother was not very loving. And so he never really learned how to love.
I mean, we've found this out through most of our stories that queens or previous royalty are much more dedicated to their court and their country than they are to being mothers. Well, I would say to them being mothers, but
you're right.
The children don't really grow up in a loving embrace.
No.
They grow up
mentally prepared to
I was just going to say prepared to serve, but okay.
Mentally feral. Okay. Trademark that one. I don't think I've ever heard that before.
I haven't either. It made me think of the fucking guy from Natalia Grace.
Might have been my inspiration. We'll never know. So his son Louis was incredibly upset with the mistress and her presence in his dad's affairs. However, they were a very toxic bunch. Agnes had 3 children by the king, and Marie was the godmother to all 3 of them.
Is that toxic, or is that just keeping the heirs
polyamorous?
It's just keeping the heirs in line with royalty, right? It's like if something happens to this one, then we got this one. Like,
well, but like she had 14 children, and Louis was heir. So like, I don't know. I just don't think she fucking cared, because let's be honest, the kings were not that great looking. They're all fucking scrawny, malnourished, fucking partially, what is it called? Incestuous, made like awful. Yeah. So who knows what was going on? Anyway, one day in 1444, I wrote 1944. One day in 1444, the prince ran into Agnes in the palace and cried, "By our Lord's passion, this woman is the cause of all of our misfortunes," and promptly punched her in the face.
Huh? Louis, jeez.
He was immediately banned from his father's presence and sent to southeastern France, where he served as sovereign. He was a good ruler, but he never stopped obsessing and would send servants to spy on her. The king sent men down to arrest him, and he jumped out of the window, making his way to the court of Burgundy. Like, Louis, you madman.
Louis had some obsession issues.
He punched her in the face. What the fuck?
Just walking down the hallway. Bam.
Just somebody running, like, "You're the reason everybody hates me." Pop. So Okay.
In 1450, Agnes was pregnant with her fourth child, and she went to join Charles on the campaign trail. So, like, remember when Louis slapped her and the king banned him? Well, he tried to rise against everybody and, like, overthrow the king, but he was promptly, like, tampered down. Like, nope, you need to quit doing that. Stop it immediately. So when she joined Charles at this time, she was trying to warn him again, like, I think he's getting ready to try something fucky again. I don't like the way things are going. Something's wrong. And she was like patted on the top of the head, like, oh, you're just cute. I don't mm-hmm. think you know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And so she went into labor early. She fell ill suddenly soon after that. And unfortunately, she delivered her baby several months early. I think it was 2 months early. And she and baby passed away on February 9th, 1450. So she had already carried three babies full term. Nothing was wrong, but this is the 1400s and there are all sorts of diseases that could occur. And so people said at the beginning that it was just dysentery and that she passed away from that. And so did baby. And everybody basically for the most part said, yep, that's officially it. But a lot of people were like, hang on a second. I don't know. Something doesn't feel right. So the king was very distraught and he fell back into his sadness / depression without her around. He happened to arrange marriages for the three daughters they had to French aristocrats, again, securing their livelihood for them. He loved her so much and he loved those children so much that he took care of them. Through the next decade, he would be like have bouts of violent illness with one thing or another. But he was absolutely very much a wine drunk lush. He would drink copious amounts of wine and participate in orgies like crazy when he wasn't violently ill. So I have to imagine his violently ill was his wine binges. But he did have an infection in his jaw. He ended up passing away in 1461 due to starvation. So
what an awful way to go
as an aristocrat, even. The irony. But yeah, so apparently he may have had like an infected tooth or some sort of something that had gone on in there. And of course, 1400s doctors are like, it looks like you got ghosts in your blood. So they really had nothing that they could do for him. So he passed away. Ready for the drama?
Okay. I thought that was drama. No.
I said, if there wasn't enough already. So remember, during those times, people were actually appointed in royalty to eat and drink before royalty indulged. If you didn't trust the people you were around or whoever the fuck served you, Thaddeus, eat this. Take a bite of everything and drink this wine for me quick. Mm-hmm. Thaddeus would do that. And if Thaddeus survived, they would continue with their night. But on mm-hmm. occasion, Thaddeus would die.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause
somebody was trying to fuck with them.
Mm-hmm.
So although there was all sorts of treason happening, not only with food and whatever, but also with the doctors and anybody else who would come to see anybody close to them was untrustworthy at the end of the day, which is kind of a fucky way to live. Ugh, fight or flight. So he was very trusted and was appointed by the king for her. He would never do anything to her, or so we think. Bum, bum, bum. I wrote this. Turns out the son, Louis, had a feel of Agnes's staff on his payroll. So we don't really know if everybody was super trustworthy or not. Regardless if Charles said they were, we didn't know for sure because they could have been double dipping, you know. Son,
mm-hmm.
father conflict. So a few days after giving birth, she was hit with a flux of the belly, citing nonstop diarrhea. That was not uncommon for women during pregnancy, but it was nothing that would kill them. So for them to identify dysentery as death is kind of absurd, knowing what we know now.
Yeah, she shit herself to death. Like,
yeah, right.
Okay.
How? Okay. So she. When she passed, they said she had dysentery, not common during childbirth, and she had already had three healthy full-term babies. And that was that. There is a ton of speculation that the king's son, Louis, went ahead and poisoned her, though. tons of speculation. What? Since Charles was a pussy ass bitch and he was the way he was, he never pursued the rumors or his own son, because how could he charge his dashing and very popular son with murder? So while Charles was not very popular with the people, and Louis wasn't very popular with the royal court, he was very much popular with his people. So he was a good leader, if anything.
Mm-hmm.
And since her body was okay, so it's so weird. Her body was buried at the Church of St. Hours, and her heart was buried in the Benedictine Abbey of Jumièges, which I fucking butchered that too. So her heart was removed, buried somewhere else, and her body was laid to rest in the church.
Okay. We haven't come across this before.
That's a weird, weird thing. So we know it that in 1777, the church decided it was too much of a scandal for her to be laid to rest at the church because she was not an honest woman in God's eyes. She was a fucking royal mistress. So they exhumed her body.
Three centuries later?
Yes.
Two centuries later, whatever.
1700s, man.
We were in the 1400s, ongoing. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. 300 years later, people have the time.
And the problems.
They really, like, this still bothers me about people today. Like, how do you have the time to even think of this? Like, how do you even, like, want to put the energy towards something like this?
Well, it was the church, so that's all they've got to live on.
I know.
So they exhumed her. They stole from her, including her fucking teeth. They ripped her teeth out of her jaw, likely as souvenirs. They then took her bones and put them in an urn under a black marble effigy in the nave of the church. It was plundered once again during the French Revolution. Remember her heart? Well, the black marble funerary slab was taken by a butcher who proceeded to use it as a meat cutting table in his shop. Letting that one sink in.
Why does that feel cannibalistic?
Weird. What? Like, I want to do more research on this butcher and unpack that now, because what the fuck? Who does that? Check out this funerary slab that I yanked up from the fucking ground over a heart, and I'm using it to chop up meat. What the fuck? So she was so her not only her were her bones put in the urn, the rest of her remains were put in there as well. In 2005.
Oh my God.
Yeah, this bitch is not. She's just tired and they just won't let her sleep. She was exhumed again.
For what?
Well, researchers at this point decided they needed to really understand. So there was 22 of them from 18 different laboratories. And there's really not much more I know for their reasoning behind it. Like, I don't understand why all that came to be, but it did. And so in 2005, they exhumed her remains again from the church. There are a couple of things they found. One, her hairline wasn't nearly as far back as the artists depicted. And her eyebrows were significantly thicker. And like, we all know, we may not all know, so if we don't, let me shed some light. Royalty and members of the church would pay off artists to depict them as saints. And so a lot of the times artists would take artists' liberties and do things that they felt made them look better. Or they just weren't that talented because they didn't have the tool or skill set. And so they took a lot of liberties when painting her, apparently. She didn't look like any of the fucking pictures.
But how would you know that the hairline was, because the thing is, if she's plucking it out, there's still hair, like her hairline is still technically there. It's just temporarily gone if it's plucked out. Well, so like if you're looking at her remains, like how can you tell the difference between if it was plucked out or not? Like, really?
So they had all these different, you
and
know,
why like, are we spending time on this? Do we need a cure for cancer? Come on.
I know.
Who gives a shit?
We have one. It's called Don't Eat Processed Foods. But anyway, so she was reconstructed through technology at the time. You know how they would reconstruct remains and cold cases or whatever? They would have the skeletal remains and then they would lay over data, overlay everything. And so what they basically,
and in my mind, you're saying like it went into an urn, and I'm thinking that they incinerated.
I thought so too, but apparently I was wrong, because they found like the contents of her stomach in there as well, which were like a bunch of different herbs and things, and like gave a fruity aromatic smell when they opened it up. They were very confused, and they found what.
How? It's 2005.
I don't know. Sealed tight. I have no idea. I don't have the logistics, but this is what I read. So
things are smell dead. I don't believe.
You would think, but I feel like at that point, all the dead things are dead and it all should all be dead. But anyway, maybe it was like dehydrated. But anyway, so they also found that there were intestinal parasites around. And of course it was the 1400s. So like it could potentially been the cause of her death, but scientists couldn't be fully convinced because it wasn't like an unnatural amount of findings or evidence. What they did find though were large traces of mercury in her hair from her head, pits, and pubes. So it was very common back then for makeups, cosmetics, any sort of like beauty, anything to have toxic metals, including mercury, because they just didn't fucking know back then. But there was not nearly enough concentrated to produce that kind of a result in a human body and the hair. So when they did the research and they did their tests, they found that the mercury was inside her perfectly preserved hair in the root sheaths with no mercury on the outside at all, which means there's no way in hell anybody slathered her with mercury or anything like that. It was 100% digested and her system processed it. So when they got their numbers back, it was 10 to 100,000 times the normal amount that would be present when people use those products like every day or whatever. So they suspect now that she ingested the mercury like 48 to 72 hours before her death. So this is still a cold case. They're considering it in some area, like some industries, a cold case still. But the majority of the like after death stuff that I shared today is actually from an excerpt of a book called The Royal Act of Poison, written by Eleanor Herman, found on the site crimereads.com. So that concludes our Agnes Sorrell story. Who knew a meme would produce so much?
And, wow, jealous Louie.
So shout out to all of the sources today: Wikipedia, theculturetrip.com, vice.com, kmska.be.en. It's English, I know. Thebrooklynmuseum.org, and again, crimereads.com. A huge litany of places, because there was all sorts of dirt on this lady and it was not all in one place.
Wow. I mean, she came out like, hey, I'm here. I'm going to make an impact.
Mm-hmm.
And then basically died because of it.
Yep. And like, so
I mean, nobody's saying that, but it's true.
No, it is. It's 100%. So she was 28 when she passed. She's got legacy, right? So she's been the subject of operas. She's been portrayed in Tchaikovsky's Maid of Orleans and a couple of other different ballads throughout history.
Hence, sex sells. Yeah. Since the 1400s and before.
Yep. Exactly. There's actually two different bodice and corset companies that use her name still.
Oh, really?
Yep.
So this is the Agnes one. There's no cups. It's just basically a waist trainer.
No, you get like a third of a cup. Come on. Just enough to hold them up.
You talk about her favoritism for the one boob.
She really didn't have favoritism for the one boob. I think that may have been.
All these pictures, even when I just quickly Google image searched her.
I know.
They all have just the one boob down, because, like she's breastfeeding.
Yeah, because the artists back then weren't portraying her as how she genuinely truly was. Both of her titties were out all the fucking time. She always had a nipple peeking out, always. She loved her boobies out, both of them. Both. I don't know where this whole like she had one even the side. Thing
I sent you, I think I know. Had, okay.
And you would think with all of those sources that would have came up, like, oh, she had her shit tailored so one titty could pop out. No, she had her shit tailored so both titties could pop out. She was into all of it.
What I sent you was from the Boozy Betch count.
Mm-hmm.
And it says women in the past were modest and had more respect for themselves, quote unquote. And then pictures of here's Agnes Sorrel, who had her gowns tailored to expose her favorite boob in the 1440s. Funny. I mean, she is definitely a hoe of history.
Oh, right.
If there was a way to have a representation of what a hoe of history is.
It would be her.
It would. Good old Agnes.
100% be her.
Wowee. That is a lot of drama.
I know. She had so much drama. And then, like, you look at the painting of her. Like, if you go and look at the what is it called? Virgin and Child Surrounding by Angels. It's so creepy. It looks like AI.
Mm.
But yeah.
Yeah, and a couple of her boobs were also disproportionately far apart.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, is this meant to be a cartoon?
Yeah. They also look like little bowling balls stuck to her body. Yep.
Me too. Maybe that's what she was like. I got it, bro. Like, I looks like I have literal melons.
I like it better this way anyway.
They were sitting high and pretty. But you have to remember, she wasn't even 30. Oh.
She didn't.
Well, thank you for digging into her. I didn't realize that there was going to be such a hefty background.
Oh, yeah. No problem. I would say also medium.com has probably the best synopsis of her life.
Hmm. It's truly intriguing to me that people want to keep digging this woman up.
I mean, I don't blame them. I don't blame them.
But I mean, as far as 2005, like less than 20 years ago, for what? Don't you have better things to do?
No, apparently not.
I'm just confused. And then for them to report back that her hairline wasn't as far back as denoted, and obviously this must be because her hair was still attached to her head, which in my brain I was thinking that it was all burned up. And then to basically say, well, there was mercury and parasites. But we're not going to confirm that she was poisoned.
No, I don't. I think she was poisoned personally.
But. Yeah, I do too. That's why I'm like, okay, so you're going to go through all of that and then not give us a conclusion.
I mean, you really can't. It's all hearsay. You have the body. You have the motive.
And they have still have some evidence.
Exactly.
Just give me the closure I want.
Oh my God. Seriously, though. I wish I had more time. I'm sure there's so much more on it.
Oh, well, thank you so much for finding what you could.
Yeah.
I guess it's Atta Girl time.
That it is. It is Atta Girl time. Do you got one?
I do. Atta Girls are where we pat ourselves on the back for something good that we've done or something good that's happened to us. And my friend Carmen, who has been mentioned several times and once was a guest on the pod, her and I have decided that we're in our season of living. And and, you know, if you want to go something, go to something. If you want to see something, you want to do something, you just do it, right? Like, this whole past year and a half, I think, like, if there was a comedian or an artist or somebody coming into town, I just went ahead and bought tickets. I didn't even ask, like, do you want to go with me? Do you want to do all the court? Like, just, if you want to do it, right?
Exactly.
So, anyway, the musical Six was coming to Detroit, and thankfully she did ask me if I wanted to go and didn't just like buy a single ticket.
Right.
Because Six is like right up our alley with the Hose of History.
Okay.
It's the six wives of Henry VIII, and they go into their story, like each wife's story. And they do it in a very Hamilton-esque way where they use relevant terms and things to talk about history. Like, one of the wives was not as attractive as her pictures had portrayed her. And so in the musical, they're talking about how, like, if he would have seen her before the pictures, he wouldn't have like swiped right, you know, like they're comparing it to like Tinder and stuff.
Oh my God. That's hilarious. And
yeah. And she was like twerking and everything. And, there was like moments of comedic relief. One of the women, his second wife, she was beheaded because there were probably many things, but at the core of it, she had a girl and not a boy. And so she was beheaded. And so throughout the whole thing, they just kept referencing back to her where somebody would complain about how bad their life was. And she was like, I lost my head.
Totally terrible. I'm dead now.
Yeah.
I lost my head.
It was so good. The women were so talented.
I love it.
It was fast. It flew by. It was like 80 or 90 minutes, no intermission. And it gave you all of the feels. And so, yeah, I can't recommend it enough. I mean, it's traveling around the country. I think it's already done in Detroit. But if you have the opportunity to see Six, or hopefully they'll put it on TV or something so that more people can see it. But
that sounds hilarious.
Oh, it was so good. And I'm not really even into musicals. Like, I don't like to watch movie musicals.
Yeah.
But I enjoy the theater. And like, I can really respect people's talents and how much effort and energy and everything that goes into it.
Theater.
Into the theater. And so even though it was a musical, I was able to like follow along. I could understand every word they were saying. I didn't have to already know the songs, but you can go listen to the songs from the soundtrack and you would understand, like you'd get the whole gist, the vibe of everything. Because I mean, I'll probably put songs from the soundtrack like on my like regular playlist. It was so good.
I'm impressed.
So the Atta Girl is going to me for my season of living.
Which I'm absolutely here for. I am. Live that shit, bitch. I'm here for you. I will live with you. Yes. It's for you.
Uh-oh, your internet's cutting out now. You're freezing
on tuna or on trend with our said it's very on par for our hoe of history today. Is that better?
It is. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's better and it makes sense. Hoe of history for today. Yes. Yeah. So awesome. What's your atta girl before we lose you?
Oh my gosh. Atta girl.
Your internet cuts out.
I know. My atta girl for myself was like this weekend. I didn't put pressure on myself to accomplish anything. And I kind of pulled a U today, but it was on Saturday.
Okay.
But I still ended up getting things like done. Like we smoked some pulled pork. We went to a concert. We had like all kinds of different stuff planned and we made it all work and it was a good time. It was a good day. And then like, I think I got food poisoning from oat milk ice cream that I ate Saturday night.
Did you get it from
type
place?
No, I got it from the grocery store and it's the only thing that I ate that was different than Seth. And it was like, the next day my stomach was all jammed up, but we still managed to like smoke the pork butt and I still managed to get through my day. And then this morning I woke up still feeling a little shitty, but I made it through. So like atta girl to me.
Oh, wow. What a weird thing to.
Yeah. I like literally that's the only thing, unless I caught like a stomach bug or something, but I would assume Seth would be the same sick as I am. And I'm not, he's not.
Well, we all have different microbiome and bacteria and can fight off things better than others. I don't know.
I'm normally the one that's never sick. That's why I feel like it was a targeted attack. I feel like the oat milk shit got me. I threw it away. Never again will I eat that brand.
Wow. How random. That would not be like what I would consider the contender for sickness.
It's literally the only thing that I ate that was different from Seth. That's it.
Okay.
So here
process
we are.
Of elimination. What are you going to do?
Right. I did it. So yeah.
I'm glad you're feeling better.
Appreciate that. I am too. We can get through life a little bit faster now.
Well, if you liked what you heard today, please rate, review, subscribe. It would mean a lot to us for you to share this with your friends. And you can submit requests of hoes of history you'd like us to cover at homancepodcast@gmail.com or on Instagram, homance_chronicles. If you're feeling extra freaky, you can join the closed group on Facebook, the Homance Chronicles, a judgment free zone. And you can get your Homance Chronicles gear on my Etsy shop, etsy.com/shop/Nicole Bonneville.
Hell yeah. Homance out.